Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 67 of Real Blend, a podcast that's in the blend game now.
Yes.
I just wanted to say, Kevin wrote that one for us.
He wanted
us to use that one. My name is Sean O'Connell. I am the managing director here at Cinema Blend. And this is episode 67 of Real Blend. Guys, this is a special one. In much the same way that Joe and Anthony Russo recorded two episodes of their Avengers trilogy or conclusion in Infinity War and Endgame, we're going to try to fit two episodes in because we have something very special to tease. But before we get to that, of course, I have to introduce the power couple that joins me every single week here at Real Blend, starting with Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Jake, how are you, sir?
Right now, have you ever seen that gif of Conan O'Brien outside of a window? And he's got like his hand up on the window, and people always use it whenever they're left out of something. I am a physical manifestation of that gif today. That's what I felt like. Is Conan O'Brien outside the window with my hand just up on the window alone?
Yes. For this reason, if you guys could see us, if we were recording the video aspect that we used to do, I am in the house of Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 DC. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Sean. And I know you're right below my feet right now. Sean and I are on two different levels of my house. Sean's
he
in
means
the basement.
That metaphorically.
Yeah. Yes. Sean is in the basement.
Standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah. So Sean's in the basement. I am upstairs, and Sean is in town, and we're going to get to why. But Sean was alluding to something because, you know, the Russo brothers did shoot the majority of Endgame and Infinity War back to back. And so we are doing a similar thing by design because, and Sean, we'll get into more detail, but we have a non-spoiler interview with the Russo brothers and then a spoiler interview with the Russo brothers. So the non-spoiler portion is going to be in the one you're listening to now. And then on Monday, you're going to hear some of the coolest stories you've ever heard that Sean and I are still freaking
out. I got to say, they just told me one of the spoiler stories and I got chills listening to it. So I have yet to hear the interview yet, but they just told me one little snippet. And I genuinely think this might be one of the most exciting things that Real Blend's ever done. And
I also want to say
part of it.
I want to say this is so really like the Russo brothers were coming to Washington, D.C. because we're going to watch Endgame this evening at the IMAX screen at the Smithsonian. It's a theater that they really love. The presentation is unbelievable. Kevin's always been telling me about that screen. I went and saw The Force Awakens on that screen at his recommendation. I can't wait to see Endgame again. They were coming by his station. They were going to be coming by Fox 5. And I have to just say, I cannot thank them enough. I can't thank Disney enough for when Kevin said, look, can we also just do some time for our podcast? And they were so gracious enough to actually do it. We'll get into the full story about how it played out. And then, of course, we'll play the interview later. But yes, we will have Joe and Anthony Russo on the Real Blend. Like, I need to just say that out loud because I can't believe it's a thing that's happening. We're going to have Joe and Anthony Russo on the Real Blend podcast the week after the biggest movie of
remember
our
when
lifetimes.
This was just a limited podcast that we were only going to do for 8 weeks, like almost 2 years ago. Remember when we were there?
Yeah.
What's crazy to me is like Sean. So Sean, being the awesome person that he is, literally flew to DC to go to the screening tonight and be a part of the interview. And you know, for people who might not know how it works, like essentially, you know, they come to a town, they do some interviews, and they were nice enough to set aside some time for us to do a sit down with them in the past, and it was pretty amazing because they showed up and we knocked it out. And the cool thing about it was, and I believe this was this is what I was told, we were the first interview they've done on a spoiler level with the Russos. So essentially, like, the reason why we're holding the spoiler review until Monday is we want to give obviously one more weekend, but we're going to, the stuff you're going to hear in this Monday interview is out of this world. But the stuff you're going to hear today in this particular interview, the non-spoiler interview, is still amazing. Like they,
yeah.
I'm very fascinated. It's almost like the tonal shift of Infinity War and Endgame, right? They're very different tones, these interviews. I'm very excited. I'm so excited we have two parts, and they were cool enough to let us do two parts, which was cool.
They really were. All right. So before we move on with the full show, so we don't have any reviews, but I want to remind anybody if you would like to leave a review for the show. So on the iTunes account, and I also understand, I talk about the iTunes account a lot, but there's so many other ways that people listen to the podcast. They don't go to the Apple iTunes player. So, but on that account, which I still use as our barometer of how many people are watching us, we're very close to 100 star ratings. We have 94 star ratings, 51 reviews. Someone did post one. Hold on. Am I able to pull it up really fast? I didn't get it. But I'll read it. Hold on. I can find it. Ratings.
By the way, I just got a text that are the Q&A tonight. So while Sean's looking for that, I'm moderating the Q&A with the Russo brothers after their 7 o'clock movie. And I thank you to whoever at Disney gave me the opportunity to do this, but I'm going to be moderating with them after the film's over. They're going to come out and do a Q&A with the audience, and I just got told that it was sold out. So it's going to be crazy. That's really awesome. Really looking forward to it.
But what's cool is it's sold out because of Kevin McCarthy.
No, it's not because of me. It's because of the movie, dude. The movie's in its first week. It has nothing to do with me.
I can't wait, Jakey.
This movie's gonna dip in the second weekend.
I want to see how many people at this screening just come up to talk to our boy DDK. I sit there and watch. It's gonna be great.
I will say, they because I didn't announce that we were doing the screening until yesterday, so it wasn't sold out then. But the cool part about it was they let us announce it this morning with the Russos during the live TV interview, and I think that's kind of what put it over the edge.
Can we just also talk about the fact that it's really cool that they're doing press like this after the movie? Like, if I were a director and I worked my butt off for years making these movies, and it opened and it was massive, I would be sitting on a beach with a drink in my hand, enjoying the moment. But the fact that they're still out here shaking hands with the fans, talking about the film, embracing this what is, I think, no short of a cultural phenomenon right now, I think a real testament to them. And I can't say that I'd be doing it.
I think a big part of it is that they are not able to talk about it. They don't do the full junket press push before the movie opens. So Anthony was saying today, Anthony, as I was talking to Anthony Russo today, was saying it's cathartic to them. Like now that they've been waiting for 3 years for the story to be out, fully. And they are excited about going out and talking to people now that they can get into details and really start to share some stuff. So
I want to say that if you are listening to the podcast today, there are two major things we're going to get into for teasing purposes. Sean and I, this particular time around, are both on the same mindset in regards to both Endgame and the latest Game of Thrones episode.
Jake, we are hive mind.
Jake is on the opposite end on Game of Thrones, middle end, I guess, in regards to Endgame. So this is going to be a bit of a combative episode, and I want to commend Jake for his tweet today, pre-war, just saying that he loved us, but I do want to make sure that Jake has the opportunity today to delve into his thoughts on both of these. We will talk Game of Thrones spoilers, because that to me is that we can discuss that. But the Endgame stuff in regards to spoilers, that will be for next Monday.
Okay, I want to read this review quick, and I finally figured out what this guy is talking about. And it's the way that he spelled the word favorite means that he's from the UK. So he calls us Favorite Movie Podcast, gave us 5 stars on Apple, which is so great. Thank you so much. The guys are great, even if they haven't seen the best movie of all time yet. Big Wednesday. Is it the surfer movie?
He came to our meetup.
I thought he was saying he had a Big Wednesday coming up. But no. This is the guy who came to the meetup and talks about a surfer movie, Big Wednesday. All right, I'm totally confused, and now I understand what's going on. Okay, anyway, you can leave us a review at the iTunes page. You can go to the Real Blend Twitter account, or you can email us at realblend@cinemablend.com. Of course, we love hearing from you guys, and if you send us a review, we promise to read it at the top of the show. Before we get into Game of Thrones debates, which will tear the show in half, Let's get to the Endgame box office and just go on record to talk about the sheer number of records that were shattered by this movie. The one that stands out to me, obviously, is 1.2 billion globally in 5 days. And when you compare it to the previous record holder, which was Infinity War, and needed 11 days to cross the 1 billion mark, the fact that this one did it in half the time is staggering to me. Now, people still don't feel, I don't see a lot of people feeling confident that it's going to knock Avatar out. No. Jake, you're one of them? You think it's going to slow down?
Well, not that it's going to slow down, but Endgame, unfortunately, because I would love to see Endgame topple Avatar, to be honest with you. Endgame has something going against it that Avatar did not, which is the summer movie season. Avatar came out in December. It was able to play all the way through January and February without really having anything big to go up against it. I mean, in the matter of just the next 4 weeks, Endgame has Detective Pikachu, it has Godzilla, it's got a lot of other things that are going to be vying for that same audience. And it got a massive head start. I mean, if you remember, I think Avatar only opened to like 70 million domestic. So like, yes, it got a really big start, but it's all about that keyword, which is legs. And I'm just not entirely sure that Endgame, because it's in the summer movie season and not coming out in December, that it's going to be able to approach that. Well, was it 2.7 billion?
2.7. And I also don't know, like, this past weekend, the theater chains did 24-hour a day screenings, you know, to try to fit in as many people to meet the need, essentially. And I don't know how long they intend to do that. Is that going to be for the next month? Like, I don't think so. That's going to slow down a bit. And that allowed them to break the opening weekend number.
I think it will beat Avatar. And here's
I hope it does. I hope you're right.
Me too. I'd rather have a great movie at the top of the number one. I mean, listen, I think Avatar is... I don't like Avatar. I think Avatar's storytelling is pretty bad. I mean, considering what that filmmaker has done, Terminator 2, Abyss. I mean, Cameron is the reason why I love movies. So it pains me to say that I don't love Avatar, but I don't. And anytime I have to talk about box office and I mention Avatar being the number one film of all time, it just doesn't feel right. And I feel like Avengers Endgame, regardless of what you feel about Avengers Endgame, I think it makes more sense for it to be there, considering the culmination of the 22 films, regardless of what you think about the movie.
It's not a massive spoiler that I am not the biggest Endgame fan in the world, but I think it should be number one over Avatar.
Yeah, I mean, and for the record, and we're going to get into a debate, but Jake doesn't hate Endgame, and he just has some
and we're gonna
get into some of those reasons today. But the reason why I think it's going to beat Avatar is because, first of all, this film opened up. Infinity War also opened in the summer, and that film hit over $2 billion worldwide at the box office. That movie had a worldwide opening of $640 million. This movie had a worldwide opening of $1.2 billion, and it's still going to continue going. Now, the question is, can it reach 2.7? I don't know. I bet you it beats Titanic. That's because Titanic's number two.
That's what Titanic said, what, 2.2?
I have to look at the exact number.
But Titanic also kind of cheated because it had the 3D re-release.
It came back, right.
Yeah. But I will say this, but also then you can kind of play into the fact that
Avatar is 2.7, Titanic is 2.18, Force Awakens is 2, Infinity War is 2, and then those are the only ones, four titles that are over $2 billion right now.
So this will be
Titanic. And a majority of them have Zoe Saldana.
All right, real quick, we'll move on to some reactions. Why don't we do a little wager here? This is for another round of Shake Shack burgers, because since that's
I paid my debt too. By the way.
This is true,
and that is why Sean is at Kevin's place, because he lost his home because he bought all of us Shake Shack.
Yeah,
a Lannister and Sean O'Connell always pays his debts.
Yeah, Sean went bankrupt after that meal because it cost so much money.
He had to hitchhike to DC.
All right, so it's a yes or no question. Does the movie top Avatar, Sean?
Yes.
Jake?
I hope it does, but I'm going to say no.
And I'll say yes. Okay, so how that bet works, we'll let Gabe figure that out. Let's move on.
Jump out of Gabe's lap.
I have no idea how that bet's going to work, yeah.
All right, the rest of the episode largely is going to be dedicated to us telling the Anthony Russo and Joe Russo story and then setting up their conversation. But before we do that, I find this fascinating in that We all saw Endgame. Kevin and I came out of it guns a-blazing. Jake was not with us last week, but recorded an episode, recorded a segment for the episode, and was able to say that it wasn't necessarily what he hoped that it was going to be. And Jake, I'll let you weigh in on that in a second. But then we all went into the battle at Winterfell. And we've been doing some Game of Thrones talk on this podcast. And I do believe that a lot of people who follow us on social media are also following Game of Thrones too. So for this season, we're going to try to at least comment on how this goes. Especially from this point of view, it was funny again that Kevin and I both immediately, I put something in the text chain right after the episode ended, and I was like, "Am I the only one who feels that this episode was not really that good?" Jake and I debated back and forth a little bit. Kevin got off the text chain altogether because he didn't even want to get into the conversation after he saw it. But Jake ended up loving it, and Kevin and I were both really disappointed. And I think Kevin actually dislikes it more than I do. And it's found it really interesting that each of these two massive properties, Jake was in one corner, and Kevin and I ended up being... And that's how it goes with a lot of things that we discuss. It's always like two against one somehow. But Jake, you've been on the opposite side of the field for both of these conversations.
It's been a very lonely time in my Real Blend family. I got to be completely honest. I sort of feel like Tom Hanks on an island by myself. And it's been a rough go. Also, too, I also not just going against the grain here in Real Blend, but also sort of going against what I feel like is a majority of society out there. And it sucks when to sort of touch on my feelings about Endgame real fast. I one of the things that you texted in our text thread was that I sounded sad in last week's podcast. I mean, a lot of times I was telling you guys when I know that I disagree with you two about a movie, I come out guns a-blazing and I'm ready to fight and I'm ready to like cinch up my shield like Captain America and I'm ready to do this. And honestly, I was kind of glad that I was in Napa last week because I didn't even want to do the show because I was so sad and I was so bummed that I didn't love it. And I was almost more mad at myself because it was like, because especially with everyone else's reaction, I was like, what is wrong with me that I didn't like it? And Kevin was so cool. Kevin was almost like talking me off the ledge. Like, dude, it's fine. You know, you're entitled to your opinion. It was a very you guys were like very comforting during what was a very kind of a really crappy time to be a fan for me of the MCU because I was so disappointed in myself.
The anticipation was so high though. We all wanted it to meet a level. And if it didn't meet that level, I would completely understand where you're coming from of just being like thinking about where did I go wrong?
Ever had that moment? Was there ever like a Dark Knight Rises or something where you were just so
I was just about to give my example.
I have often.
Mine was Avatar. I will never forget walking out of Avatar when it was over and every single person was over the moon about it. And I was like, I was so disappointed considering what James Cameron has delivered to me as an audience member over the years that that's what that movie was. So how you feel about Endgame and that disappointment level of like everyone loving it but you,
right?
That was Avatar for me.
But the difference is I feel like the tide has turned for Avatar and I don't see now that happening for Endgame.
But then it was hard.
But now, you're on. Because I was the same way as you. Because I was in London at the Junket at the world premiere. And I remember thinking, like, what did I see that you all... But I'd argue, not that there's a right side of history when it comes to movies, but I'd argue that we're on the right side of history when it comes to Avatar. I think in 10 years, people are still going to be tweeting me and texting me and telling me I'm an idiot.
And that's the thing that we discussed on the text chain. I mean, I think it comes down to it's not that Jake hates it. It just didn't meet the expectations that he wanted from this time he has spent with the MCU. The Endgame is all about these 21 films that we've experienced leading to this moment. And if it doesn't hit you on a certain level, then I can understand why that disappointment, because it's not like you're just sitting down for a film that you think might be good and you watch it and it just, you know, it's fine.
Right.
There's a lot of weight.
Sitting down for Captain Marvel and being disappointed in Captain Marvel.
There's a lot of weight here, and I think that's a very interesting way to think about when you hear Jake's points and his viewpoints is that it's based on emotion and how much time we spent with this universe, and I think a lot of people are. It just matters how it hits you, I guess.
Well, I have to give props to you guys because, like I said, normally we have a lot of fun on this show. going at each other's throats. And I think when we get into Game of Thrones, I think that's going to be a good example of that. But I,
now that I felt one, I like have no for the first
time. Yeah, I know. But I felt like for the first time in nearly 70 episodes, like I'm almost getting teary eyed saying this, like this felt different. And it felt like, I felt like you guys felt like it was different and you guys treated it like it was different. And there was just this sort of like really sort of like comforting. I'm telling you, like it really like it, like the last 7 days have been really weird for me as such a big fan of that series.
I have to ask, did you listen to last week's episode or can you not even listen to it?
I was at the airport in San Francisco and I started listening to it. I kid you not. I was in the airport about to fly from San Francisco to New York and I started listening to it and got about 8 minutes in and genuinely was like so bummed. And I saw someone walk by in a Captain America shirt and I took my AirPods out.
It was Kevin's mom.
Yeah. That moment was planned a week ago. So that was perfectly timed.
We knew.
That was brilliant.
I'm wearing the shirt now. I'm wearing it. She gave it to me.
That's the one my mom wore. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. No, but I could see like Jake like crying in a bathroom stall. He's like very upset about it. Yeah. No, but it's a fascinating thing. So Jake, you went and saw it again. Sean and I both loved it. We've both seen it. I've seen it twice. I think Sean's seen it twice now. We're going for a third time tonight. Listen, if I'm ranking my MCU, this is top five for me, but I still have Winter Soldier and Infinity War in my number one and number two spots. I love Endgame. I think it's a 5 out of 5.
So
but
you like Infinity War better?
I think Infinity War is a better film, but we're talking about a range of like a point one better than the other. You know what I mean? Right. Like Endgame and Infinity War.
But in
to
the
me
Olympics, that's the difference between first and second place.
Right. So
did it change at all for you?
What we're talking about, me going back and seeing it a second time, one of the things I was telling the boys is I wanted to go see it. I wanted to give it a few days after I saw it because I saw it at a press screening a few days before it came out. And this is even before like all the slew of reviews started coming out. And one of the things I was concerned about is that I was judging it based on the film that I wanted it to be versus the film that it was. And I think that that's a really important distinction when reviewing a film, and expectations are such a big part of reviewing movies. So I wanted to give it a few days and then go back and see it again, knowing exactly what it was and watch it based on what it was on the screen in front of me versus what I thought should have happened. Here's what I'll tell you. It reinforced the good and the bad for me. The stuff that I loved, and don't get me wrong, I mean, there are a lot of things in that movie that I think are among, when this year ends, I think will be among the best things I've seen in any movie this year. I have YouTubed scenes just to rewatch them again because they're so good. That being said, the movie for me also has a lot of what I like, kind of what sort of feel like cinematic paper cuts, things that just are just driving me up the freaking wall and just are driving me crazy. And it rewatching it again, those things also like even drove me even more crazy the second time around. So whenever it was something that I loved, the second time around, I wanted to stand up and cheer and scream and yell and applaud even louder. But the thing, whenever a moment would come on that it was one of those moments that drove me crazy, and we'll get into this in the next episode, I would sit there and shake my head and go like, nope, still don't like that. So it reinforced my feelings, I guess.
People listening, the next episode, the Monday episode that we're going to be placing on the podcast with a spoiler interview from Russo's, Jake is going to go into really detailed discussion about those things. And so Sean and I both loved it. We both gave it a 5 out of 5. One of the cool moments today, and I know we're going to get to the Russo Brothers. Sean, are we doing Russo Brothers interview first, or are we going to Game of Thrones first?
Game of Thrones first.
Okay, so we'll get into the story of the Russo Brothers, but one of the cool things about the Russo Brothers interview today was, because Sean's favorite movie of all time now is Endgame, and for the longest time that I've always known Sean, his favorite movie of all time has been Die Hard, and it stayed Die Hard consistently for years and years and years. So today, to see Sean essentially tell Anthony that, and Anthony respond the way he did, and I'll let Sean get
into
detail
say?
On
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, I really want to hear the story.
Joe was on his phone. Joe was in the middle of a text chain. So I basically talked to Anthony while we were waiting for the podcast to start. We were waiting to get our recording going. We lucked out in this instance. I don't know. Have we told this yet? We were supposed to do the podcast recording after Kevin got the Russos on his TV segment.
Yes.
And this morning, Kevin texts me. Thankfully, I was in a car already heading over to a station and says, they're running early. Are you almost here? And I was close. So, and this never happens. Like whenever you're trying to interview somebody, it's always running late. So they got to the station at 10 and we were not supposed to, they were going to go on the air at 10:30. We were going to get them at 10:45 for Real Blend. They got there at 10 and they wanted to do the podcast first. So I got there a couple
of
minutes.
Thank God. Thank God you got there, man.
Thank God I got there.
If we hadn't gotten there,
that story stresses
early,
me out.
If Sean wasn't there early, we would not have the last 8 or 9 minutes of this podcast. And that's why an interview, because to me, and I really truly do believe in things are meant to be, that timing all happened in my opinion, in a way that benefited us, because Sean and I were so passionate about this film that we were able to actually take a deeper dive with them because they happened to be running early. And had they not, I don't know that we would have the stuff you're going to hear on Monday. That's the stuff that I don't think we would have gotten.
Well, and because after they finished with Kevin, a lot of people from the station wanted their pictures taken with them, and the brothers hung around and took pictures with everybody. And we would have been sitting there, like, totally stressing out, waiting to start the podcast, right? Like, because we would have known we were on borrowed time. So anyway, we started early. They sat down. We set up where all the audio was going to be. Kevin was still working out a couple of things with his news directors, getting everything set up for the TV segment. They were getting mic'd. So I was just talking to Anthony. I said, look, you know, I have to just tell you this before we get started, that Die Hard has been my go-to answer, you know, for all time. McTiernan's first Die Hard. If anyone asks me what my favorite movie is, and he goes, oh, that's so funny. You know, a classic. That's such a great movie. He goes, and then he started telling me, he goes, I actually just watched that with my teenage son. And it was the first R-rated movie that I let him watch.
Oh, that's cool.
And I wanted that to be the first one that he saw. And I said, oh, that's really funny. It's one of the first ones I let my son watch too. And then we went on to part two, and it was way more raunchy. Like, there's a lot of cursing in part two, in Die Hard 2. And even PJ turned to me and he was like, God, they curse a lot in this one. And I didn't even realize. And he goes, oh, I'm so glad you told me that, because my son is asking me which ones can we watch next. And I was going to show him too, but I'm glad to know that. I said, but wait, I brought that up for a reason. I said, I want to let you know that, I've changed my mind. Like, your movie has replaced Die Hard. And he was like, he sat back and he was like, that's crazy. And then he said, you know, just to hear, this is his quote, it's gonna be burned in my memory forever, he goes, just to hear that from someone like you means the world to me. And I was like, this is Anthony Russo telling me this.
Dude, I have tears. I have freaking tears in my eyes hearing this story.
My jaw was on the floor.
Oh my God.
Sean, why don't we just take this opportunity now to toss to our non-spoiler interview with the Russos.
Let's do
and
it.
We'll come out on the other side, and then we'll talk Game of Thrones and get into our blend. So this is. I'll let Sean introduce it.
Well, Kevin and I got a chance to sit down with Joe and Anthony Russo. And as we've been saying to you guys this whole time, we're breaking up into two segments. This is the non-spoilery conversation because per their request, they really want to keep all spoilers under wraps until the movie's had a second weekend so that as many people as possible can enjoy the film for what it is. So we got into some big picture MCU talk, some big picture Infinity War and Endgame approach with the brothers, and then we'll save all of our spoilers for next week. But for now, here's our conversation with the directors of Endgame, the non-spoiler version.
All right, well, first of all, congratulations to both of you. Thank you for joining the Real Blend podcast.
Thank you.
I'm Kevin, this is obviously Sean, and this is an honor to have you both on. When I sat down with you guys at the junket, there was a moment in the interview where I asked about a specific scene where Cap and Tony say, do you trust me? I do.
Mm-hmm.
You made a joke that it wasn't in the movie. I was just curious, without spoiling the context of it, it is in the film, but can you talk
about... But not in that construction.
Right.
That handshake is actually stolen from an earlier scene in the movie.
Really?
Yes, they don't shake hands.
Right, in the scene
sequence,
they don't. Right.
Right. So that's what I was getting at, is that's how we tend to manipulate footage to create a moment in a trailer that isn't necessarily a moment from a movie. So people are watching that trailer, and again, I'm saying that's not in the movie contextually the way that it's done, because that's not the repair moment. The repair moment actually happens in the movie 45 minutes before that.
Right. And but so that handshake...
We're going to let you get to your point about this.
No, I just want to know, like, you know, we were in that moment. So now your profile picture on Instagram, I believe, is your reaction to that moment. Who created that? Was that you?
No, that was not
me. No, I put it up.
That's all I wanted to know.
He became a meme. I was like, all right, we're going to... We always try to embrace the, you know, memes and be very... deprecating and referential about to fans.
Right. Going into the opening weekend, let's just talk about what your expectations potentially could have been and then where how they might have been exceeded. What were you guys hoping happened and then what actually happened over opening weekend?
I mean, look, like when you're charged with like writing the final chapter of the book, you know, and executing it, you know, our hope was that with any favorite story, you always want the end to be the best part of the story, you know? So that was like really what we were hoping to do. You know, I don't know, you know, even if we got anywhere close to that, you know, that was our aspiration. And it seems like at least for some people on some levels that we delivered an ending that seems satisfying.
It's always about the narrative too of these movies in the marketplace. How did it do? Did it break a record? Did it beat the last one? That stuff is really critical to the life of a movie. And of course, we were hoping that it was going to break the international record, just because that's a story, right? So the international single weekend box office. And then you're hoping and praying that it beats the domestic, which was set by Infinity War last year. Otherwise, frankly, to some people, it looks like a failure, you know? So you have to, like, it's crazy that that a movie like this has this kind of demands on it. But we saw international numbers coming in on Tuesday and Wednesday of opening week because it was coming from Australia and the Asian markets, from China, Philippines, and the numbers were huge. So especially the China numbers, they were astronomical. So we started to get a good sense that, oh, maybe we can catch fire here and something much bigger can happen.
But I got to be honest with you, like I'm almost disappointed that the movie did so well because it's like the box office story has literally dominated the conversation and it's sort of not the most interesting part of the story.
Right, so, yeah.
Not in our
circles. For me, yeah,
not exactly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, exactly. Story. We obviously love the movie, and one of the things I find interesting is, again, this is the non-spoiler part of our conversation, is the spoiler window. And there's been a lot of people, I saw a great tweet today from Jacob Tremblay talking about the idea that anybody who spoils films for somebody is a form of bullying. Like, you're basically taking away someone's happiness by spoiling it for them, and that person is getting, you know, something ruined for them. As directors of somebody these films, what is the proper spoiler window? I mean, in the sense of how do you want people to experience it? Like, can you talk about it in 2 weeks? Like, where do you feel?
I think you have to be fair about it, because we are, as you know, exceedingly anti-spoiler, and I feel it for the same reason. It's bullying. It could even be sociopathic to go online or walk out of a theater like some guy did and shout out the end of a movie while a bunch of people are standing in line waiting to go see it. And they've got 10 years of their life and their time and their emotions invested in it. It's a despicable thing to do. But I think you have to be fair. 2 weekends feels like enough time for everyone to get to see it. And then people should be, because you also want people to be able to talk about it. And so at a certain point, I think after the second weekend, it's okay to start.
Now that both parts are out, talk to us about how much of Endgame did you film or was ready at the time when Infinity War came out, and discussing where they were going to break and how they were going to flow into each other, now that we can sort of think about them as two parts and one large part.
Yeah. We had shot, I would say, probably about 85% of Endgame by the time that Infinity War came out.
Wow.
The original intention was to shoot 100% of it. But basically what happened was, so we shot Infinity War first, and then we started shooting Endgame while we're editing Infinity War. And we finally got to the point where we really needed to turn all our attention to Infinity War in order to get the movie finished properly in the post-production process. So we stopped shooting earlier than we had anticipated.
We're exhausted because they started to overlap with each other.
Sure. Yeah,
right.
And trying to get, I mean, just trying to make one of these movies is historic. I mean, they're, you know, these are the most expensive movies ever made, and we're shooting them at the same time, and we had to get one out while we're still shooting the other one. It started to get crazy. So we decided that we're going to hold the third act of, which was the hardest part of the movie, of Endgame until the fall.
Because you were locked into the date, too. It's not
You are.
We're hurling toward a date.
Frankly, so, I think that, like, when you look at these, I think that we always were like, oh, my God, never shoot back-to-back again. That was insane. But I don't think we would have had the same momentum in between movies were they not a year apart.
Right.
A year is long enough to sustain a dialogue, a collective dialogue. 2 years, I think that it starts to dissipate and other things start to occupy people's focus.
Yeah, and last non-spoiler question for you, focusing specifically on Infinity War. I was lucky enough to go to the press conference and ask this question to Mr. Downey Jr., but not to you. I was curious from a filmmaking standpoint, when you filmed the characters turning to dust in Infinity War specifically, how you achieve, I know that obviously there's CG, but how do you achieve that shot? Like, what do you tell the actors to do? Do they know what's going on with their character at that exact moment? And also specifically the Spider-Man moment, just kind of having that emotional moment with Tony and Spider-Man in Infinity War. Just how you achieve that from a filmmaking level.
Yeah, that we went through a lot of experimentation with that, to be honest with you, because it's a difficult thing to play, and it could, if you don't handle it properly, it could end up unintentionally being a little silly. You know what I mean? So you have to. So we did rehearse with the actors quite a bit on set about how they would perform in that moment. We experimented with a few things. And by the way, that experimentation also continued into our visual effects process. We did try many different versions of what it would look like on a visual effects level as they disintegrated.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a bit of a fishing expedition. But basically we sort of wanted to, you know, we were trying to focus, like always, we always try to focus on the emotional experience of the actor. You know, in the moment. So, and that's sort of what were they feeling at that moment where they felt something happening to them like that, that they couldn't control, they couldn't stop, especially those characters who it was happening to after they had seen another character already dissipate.
You know, obviously pulling at your heartstrings, Cap seeing Bucky, Okoye seeing Black Panther, Tony seeing Peter, you know, these are all very emotionally charged relationships. And the Peter scene, I think we had done a take or two. We knew we wanted to save it for the last one. And we'd done a take or two where it played as quick as all the other ones. We thought, this has to be climactic. You know, he's got spider sense, so he could feel it coming before it actually gets him. And we thought, wouldn't it be interesting, too, if like your own emotional or spiritual core could hold it off for a second or two longer than someone else, right. You know? Because this is a magical event. It's not, you know, this is nothing that's based on anything right. In the physical universe. So, and then, you know, we just started talking to Tom and Downey. Downey's always extremely helpful in blocking. And we started saying it's not having the emotional impact it needs to have. Tom, what if, you know, you're a kid, this is scaring the shit out of you. What if this is something that you don't want to have happen? You can't, you know, you're scared. And what would, you know, you don't want to go. So what would happen? And then he started improvising, I don't want to go. And Downey, I think, it helped with the blocking of him falling into Robert and Robert laying him down on the ground. Ooh, and then, so it was all, and frankly, that it took about 5 minutes to, or 10 minutes just to, the next take we went out and they nailed it and that was it. You know, and everybody was crying on set.
And, you know, one of the cool things about that interview you just heard, obviously you hear Joe and Anthony getting super detailed about how they did those amazing scenes when people were dusted in Infinity War. And just hearing, I mean, Sean and I were just sitting there watching Joe and Anthony break down the Spider-Man, Iron Man Infinity War moment when Spider-Man turns to dust. And just hearing them talk about the setting up of the shot was absolutely amazing. All right, so Sean, it's time to get battle ready, man. You ready for
War
this?
War ready.
All right.
War ready.
So,
ready.
I have no problem with Jake's thoughts on Endgame, and I respect it, but he is 100% wrong when it comes to Game of Thrones. So I don't know where we want to start on this, but...
This is a divisive episode. Jake, I'm finding out that if you feel like you're in the minority on how you feel with Endgame, I think that there's just as many people who believe what you believe about this episode as the people who believe what Kevin and I believe.
Yes.
And I think it's falling into people who have lived with the show for X amount of years versus people who, like Kevin and myself. Now, Kevin got to a certain point and then binged the rest. I binged it all in a month. And people are yelling at me saying that I didn't live with it long enough. Do you think that that's an accurate read? Because Jake has watched the what? It's not called the Battle at Winterfell. What's it called?
It's called The Long Night.
The Long Night? Or the last night, or the long.
I think it's the long night.
I think that's right. Jake says it's a top five all time for him. You've watched it at least three times now, right?
Yeah, I've watched it three times. I watched it the night that it aired on Sunday. I watched it, had the argument with you guys, silenced your text thread, and then went back and rewatched it again.
Now, did you watch it three times because you need to watch it that many times to actually see what's happening?
Yes, that's
no,
why
I wanted
it three
to try
times.
To convince myself Thank that my you. Friends weren't as wrong as I thought they were, but unfortunately, I couldn't come
okay.
to that conclusion.
All right. Convince us. What do you love about it? Is it the action or the character beats? Or
it's
what?
Funny because the things that you hate about it, I think, are amazing. Kevin, go.
I think that Sean and I should real quick tell our sides of what we don't like about it. That way Jake can defend it. And I do want to say I was a original Game of Thrones viewer. I watched from seasons one through seasons about 4.5 or 5.
Did you watch? But you didn't watch from season one live. Like you caught up, right? Like,
no,
like,
so,
like when we met Ned Stark at the Four Seasons, you hadn't seen the show yet.
So let me clarify. So season one was out. Jake and I had an experience with Ned Stark where Sean Bean ruined the ending of Ned Stark's fate in that moment. Then I went home and I bought the Blu-ray collection. So
I mean,
Lauren,
if anyone's going to ruin it for you.
Lauren and I watched season one all the way through, and then we watched live 2, 3, 4, and then some of 5, and then I stopped. And then so I did go back and I rewatched everything because I remember seeing certain things in 5 that I thought I didn't see, but I did. So I guess I'm not an OG original Game of Thrones viewer, but I was watching enough of it live to have felt an impact of this episode.
Kevin, in a nutshell, what did you dislike about the episode?
Almost all of it. I couldn't see any of it. It is one of the most poorly shot episodes of television I've ever seen. And I find that having to pause my TV 3 times, a 65-inch 4K 240Hz television, which should be broadcasting beautifully, I couldn't see anything. The only time the show was even visible, at least in 4K HD or whatever HD it was when the Red Woman would light the fires. Then the episode would brighten up and I could see things. Other than that, everything with the dragons was blurry. The entire show looked like I was watching a 3D film without glasses. It was mushy. It was nasty looking. It was hard to make out. I couldn't tell who was on what dragon. I couldn't tell who was fighting who. And then at one point, they beautifully somehow get every character paired up with their exact person that you want for the show. Let's have Jaime and Brienne. Boom, in the corner. Let's have them fight together. Perfect. Let's get Danny and Jormund. Beautiful. Boom. Perfect. And like, everything was puzzle pieced, in my opinion, to serve what people wanted to see. And that being said, so it's not just the dark cinematography. It was the storytelling of that episode that I found problematic. Also, the episode ends on a very cool note. The Theon-Arya note was awesome. I love the Arya telling him he's a good man. I love that whole scene. Or I'm sorry, Bran telling him he's a good man. I love that whole moment. That moment was awesome. And the Night King, I thought that was really cool. But see, to me, since it ends on such a high note, people forget how awful the last 75 minutes of that episode was. And so going back, and then you might go, Kevin, oh, you don't really get the battle episodes. Okay, so my favorite episodes of the entire series, to give clarification, are Hard Home, Battle of the Bastards, the Battle at the Wall, I can't remember the name of the episode, and what's the other? Blackwater.
All largely directed by the same guy.
Exactly. Blackwater.
So I don't understand what happened.
Amazing episodes. Brilliant episodes. Actually, Hard Home is the best episode of that entire series. I think this episode is one of the worst of the series. And I truly...
That line, I have to be completely honest with you. Okay, yeah. All right.
It's not hyperbole, that's how I felt. I was actually angry. I was so mad that I didn't want to talk to you guys about it because I thought that I was the only person on the planet who felt this way. And then when I went to bed and woke up the next morning and saw Sean's reaction, I said to myself, oh my God, it wasn't just me. I literally went to bed depressed. I'm like, how is this episode that's been so built up turn out so poorly? And then all of a sudden, so this episode ends, I just don't understand how it was broadcast that way, I get the argument. Oh my gosh, it was the fog of war. They couldn't see anything because they couldn't see anything. There was snow everywhere.
Well,
I don't care about
that.
That's
what I want to say. Like the critique is that obviously, if people don't know, there's an entire reaction series. You can go onto CinemaPlan's YouTube and find out exactly what I thought about the episode. And
also
I'm getting a lot
the
of comments
because those are fun.
Oh, the comments this week are not fun at all. There's a lot of critique of saying like that you can't see what's happening because they made the conscious decision to immerse you in the battle, right?
Cop out.
But I think that that's fine for a moment or two, but ultimately you're a television show and a TV show has viewers and I don't agree. If that's the stylistic choice that that episode decided to make, then I'm going to say I didn't agree with it because if that's what they were trying to do, fine, they accomplished that, but I would have preferred to step back and see what's happening.
When the dragons were flying in the sky, my TV
specifically
looked-
that.
My TV looked like someone took a blanket and put it on top of it. And it was just a blanket of like nothing. I'm not kidding you. I couldn't see. And I'm not exaggerating. I could not see anything. And I am not overselling that. I had to stop the show three times and adjust my television. And at one point, I had to do the worst thing you could ever do with a television is put on that stupid motion smoothing thing that I hate. Because it somehow gave me a 10% or so reduction in that horrible blurry nature of those sequences that were like essentially happening at night. Jake,
you actually enjoyed this. You enjoyed this.
Very much so. Okay, here's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
This episode is the 70th episode of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Kevin, if you believe that this episode ranks in the bottom five of the 70.
It does.
I have to question your judgment of Game of... There is no possible... You didn't like it? That's fine.
It's bad.
But you can't think that this ranks in the... And if you're ranking from first to 70th place, you think that this falls between 66 and 70.
Yes, I would rather watch all the awful episodes in season two when Daenerys is in Karth.
Or five.
Leading up to episode eight. Then watch this episode ever again. Jake, I'm not exaggerating when I tell you, I couldn't actually see anything.
Then how did I see every, like, yes.
I have no idea.
Was it dark? Yes. It was a dark episode. But I'm sorry. I subscribe to what you guys refer to as a cop-out. I loved being immersed in this frenetic, beautifully edited, gorgeous. There were some shots in this episode. It's funny that you talk about how poorly shot it was. Because there were so many moments in this episode that I thought, that's one of the most beautiful shots on the show. It's absolutely gorgeous.
I know what you're talking about, those wide shots.
I mean, the shot of the lights of the Dothraki being going out.
That is great. That is great.
Beautiful.
Did you guys notice the shot from above when the Melisandre is going into King's Landing, they open the doors.
Yeah.
And look at the footprints stamped into the snow. It looks like the Iron Throne. Yep. Like, go back and look at that. I haven't seen it confirmed anywhere. To me, my first thought was like, holy crap, it kind of has that Iron Throne
look to it.
There were so many shots. The score was one of the most beautifully written, perfectly placed pieces of music. We essentially saw three individual films during that episode. We saw this stomach crunching drama at the beginning where I was just anxious. I felt like I couldn't breathe in the first 20 minutes of this episode as we're leading into this. The second was this really cool like horror film where that like, you know, where Arya's kind of going through the library and, you know, she's kind of having to throw the book so that the whites are kind of chasing. And then the last one was just this relentless action movie I felt like we were getting three different films, three different genres. I felt like it was paced beautifully. I thought each character, and you know, here's the deal. One of my biggest complaints about a complaint that people have is that there weren't enough deaths.
Right.
And I have an issue with that because this is a show that has made itself famous really by going against expectations. And normally that expectation is that someone's not going to just randomly die. For years, people have just been killed off without expectation, without warning, unless you've read the books, obviously. And it's shocked us and it surprised us and we didn't see it coming. And so everyone goes into this episode assuming that everyone's going to die. And once again, they do the opposite of what we think is going to happen. And for some reason, that bothers me. This has never been a show that's gone by what we thought was going to happen. And to me, I kind of liked that they subverted expectations and more people survived. Like I don't need death to equate to good storytelling. I thought it was beautifully directed. I didn't have a problem seeing it. I've watched it three times. Not just that, I've watched it three times. You guys have been in my place. You know how much natural light pours into my home, which makes watching dark stuff sometimes difficult on my TV. I had no problem telling who was on what dragon. I thought some of the dragon sequences was like, well, there's one shot that reminded me of the Tim Burton shot in the first Batman movie where like where it goes up against the. I thought it was unbelievable. I thought it was gorgeous. I thought the story choices were fantastic. I thought it makes sense that Jorah would be with Daenerys because he would be protecting her. I thought it made sense that Jaime would be with Brienne because he would probably be trying to protect her too. I didn't think there were any story choices.
They just happened to be in the exact spot.
Of like, course, Arya happened to be with the Hound. If we were in a battle, I'd be right next to you because I would be defending
your ass. I agree with you, but story-wise, they had them end up, of course Arya was with the Hound. Of course. Like, it was too written.
Jaime and Brienne started the battle standing right next to each other.
That's fine, but I just feel like it's cheap that they ended up through all that chaos in the exact spots together. It just doesn't make any that to me feels written.
Okay.
I want to get here's one what I'll comment.
Say. It makes as much sense having them next to each other at the end of the battle as it does having Gwyneth Paltrow at the end of Endgame.
Uh-oh. It's hard for me to critique that one.
We'll get into that next week.
I don't think she should be there either. I want to say one quick thing about deaths, and then we'll kind of move on because we have to go through this. It's not that I need deaths in the story to justify, but I think that was an episode that was set up to be.
I agree.
This is going to be such a significant battle.
Yep.
That in this situation, people have to die. To convey how brutal the Army of the Dead is. It tried to say, this is the most brutal battle you're ever going to have, but most everyone's going to survive.
Let me ask you guys one question because I know we got to wrap it up. Could the next three episodes, could what happens in the next three episodes make you look back at this episode more fondly?
Oh, yeah. Yes, for sure.
And where you go, it had to happen that way.
It's not like Endgame in that this is not the end of the story. And that's why I'm still leaving the door wide open.
Could this be like a Last Jedi moment where we hope that Episode 9 makes us look back at Last Jedi more fondly?
I want to clarify that I still love Game of Thrones, and I can't wait to watch the. I mean, this episode did feel like an ending, right? Like that was it felt like, especially this weekend with Endgame and this episode hitting and the hype behind it. There was a finality to it that was just, in my opinion, very underwhelming. And I want to say that I respect. And I love Jake's passion for the episode, and I have absolutely no negativity to say to him. That's how he felt about it. I'm joking when I say he's wrong, but
let me tell you that if you and I ever go to battle, I'm gonna make sure that when the battle's over, I'm standing right next to you, and I'm gonna go, "See, I told you, it could totally happen."
All right. Speaking of endings,
okay. Can I say one last thing? One last thing, and then we'll wrap up this episode. You guys, as your friends, you have no idea how cool it was to watch what happened to you guys today. One of the coolest things about doing this business is that we all get to meet the people that have an impact on who we are and what we love. But I think sometimes the only thing cooler than it happening to us is watching it happen to people that we love. And watching that happen to you guys today was, I mean, and a sign of like true friendship. I had no sense of like FOMO or anything. It was just, honestly, I woke up today genuinely excited for you guys as if it were happening to me. So I'm really psyched that today happened to you guys, and I'm really proud that you guys were able to pull it together and make it happen for the show.
Jake, awesome. Thank you very much. And because you said that, I got to ask you a very important question. I was doing some really important research recently, and I don't know if you guys saw this, but the Night King was giving interviews over the past press tour for...
We almost made the entire show!
Some amazing reporter had the amazing sense to ask the Night King what his favorite band of all time is. Have you guys heard about this?
You got to tighten these up.
You guys heard about this yet?
What's the Night King's favorite band?
Do you guys hear about this?
Yeah. If you go back and watch the episode, he has earbuds in during the fight sequences, and he's listening to this band. So this is a big deal.
Yeah.
You know about this, Sean?
No, I have no idea who this could possibly be.
They're called the 90-90 Boston's. 90-90 Boston's! 90-90 Boston's!
Right. Wow, that is a deep dive. into some early 2000s ska band.
Ska.
That's a ska reference.
All right, so Sean, I'm only telling you this on our podcast because we are rushing. So Sean and I are going to DC tonight for the Endgame screening.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make an executive decision here. Can we, Sean, Jake, and myself?
You're not Gabe.
I know, I'm being Gabe. I'm being Gabe today. Can we give our real quick Mark Ruffalo blend movies and then end it?
Yes, definitely. Jake, go first. Go.
Zodiac, I think he does a really good, gives an amazing performance in it and does a great job of sort of representing the audience in a movie about people who are obsessed beyond anything most people are ever obsessed about. I think Mark Ruffalo is incredible in that film.
Terrific. Kevin?
Zodiac's my the best movie I think Mark Ruffalo's done. My favorite is oddly enough is 13 going on 30. I just love that movie. I know it's ridiculous,
it's a great movie.
I love him in that movie. I love those types of films, like Age Shifts. I always love Freaky Friday. I mean, there's something about that type of story that makes me happy. And I just thought that Ruffalo was really great in that role. Now, listen, I mean, dramatically, the guy has done way more better work in regards to the overarching stories of movies. And I think Zodiac is his best movie. But overall, I think this is my favorite character.
Mine is Begin Again. From John Carney. And if you don't know John Carney, he did Sing Street and he did Sing Once. Street. And Begin Again, it might be his, you know, third best movie compared to the other two, but it's still wonderful. It's completely delightful. It's a movie that's totally based on music. Ruffalo plays this great disheveled record producer who discovers an amazing budding songwriter talent played by the lovely and talented Keira Knightley. The two of them have amazing chemistry. The songs in it are fantastic. If you have not seen Begin Again because you it really flew under the radar, please go seek it out. It is, I'd say Zodiac is his best movie for sure. But for favorite, I'm going to go with Begin Again because I just love the films of John Carney. We will post on social media what the next blend game is going to be. I'm going to blame Gabe for not being here to keep us on point with that one. Kevin and I have to run to go see Endgame for a third time.
Always have an amazing time.
Our 7th, 8th, and 9th hours to the Russo brothers' amazing masterful creation. We'll be back next week where we're going to be diving into, what a come down. We're going to have to get into things like The Hustle and Detective Pikachu. Like, what fun is that? That's no good. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Jake is at Jake's Takes. Kevin is at Kevin McCarthy TV. And I'm at Sean_O'Connell. Leave us a review on our iTunes page. You can go to the Real Blend Twitter account and drop us a review. Or you can write a nice email to realblend@cinemablend.com. All right. This has been Real Blend number 67. The one that had Joe and Anthony Russo talking about Avengers Endgame on our podcast. But you guys won't have to wait very long for Real Blend 68 because we are going to prep it and get it ready for Monday. And we will have our spoiler-filled conversation with the Russos. And Jake will explain to us in specific detail the things that bother him about Endgame. And Kevin and I will fight him on those.
Done.
Kirk!
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.